Hello and welcome to Module 2 of Ultimate Conversational Hypnosis. I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, your guide through these modules. Now, I want to emphasize to you that during these modules, you're going to have homework to do. It's important that I slowly introduce you to that concept. Without homework, without the application of the sound principles that I'm going to share with you, you won't make any progress. But with homework, your progress will be simple. So you should choose to do your homework. And the homework is going to be very easy. It's just going to be a matter of taking what I teach you and having fun with it, using it on others, seeing where it works, seeing where it doesn't work, and then adjusting your technique accordingly. Because just like the first time you ride a bicycle, things may not go so well. I remember the first time I rode a bicycle, I was at my parents' house in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I was at the top of the driveway. The driveway had a slight incline to it, so I was at the garage. The garage door was closed. My bike was backed up to it, and I was facing toward the street. And my plan was to lift my feet up off the ground, not pedal at all, just put them on the pedals and coast down the gradual incline, and then take a left turn onto the sidewalk. Everything was going great. I started coasting, had my feet up, took the left turn, and then I hit a tree. Well, at that point, I could have concluded that riding a bike doesn't work. But I was looking around me, and all of my friends were riding bikes. So I decided that I would try it again. And of course, sure enough, eventually I was able to ride a bike, and now I enjoy biking almost every day. It's the same thing with anything you want to do in life. You must practice. You've got to accept the fact that you're going to go out there and make mistakes. That's okay. You're going to get better. You're going to refine your technique. You're going to practice in front of friends. First time I rode a bike, I was in front of friends. I wasn't among a bunch of people who were going to judge me, such as in the Olympics. No, I was among friends. And sure, they laugh and kid around, but it's okay. They're friends. And it doesn't matter anyway. So when you practice these techniques, be sure to do so initially with friends and then try the techniques out in actual situations. Okay, so how is this course structured? Well, this is module 2, and this module is actually going to primarily focus on the history of ultimate conversational hypnosis. How did we get here? Who has contributed to it? And what can we learn from those contributions along the way? Certainly, people who contribute to a body of knowledge don't realize what it's going to eventually evolve into. Their contributions throughout history, some of the contributions have been overlooked by others who have put together programs similar to this one. This program is Ultimate Conversational Hypnosis. It's the best you're going to find, I'm sure of it. And to make sure, I'm going to go in depth. One of the ways I'll go in depth is in the history of conversational hypnosis. How did we get here, and what else can we learn from the little parts along the way, from the scientists and great people along the way who contributed? Because some of those techniques are no longer used or taught in mainstream conversational hypnosis. So we'll go back in this module, and we'll pay homage to them and see what we can learn from them. Each of these modules is individually developed with the idea that you can use them as study guides when you're done. We will be covering all sorts of topics. Each module is 1 hour long, approximately, and you will learn something new in each module. And I really hope you enjoy that. So let's take a look, before we get into the history lesson, let's take a look at the types of things you will actually be learning. Well, you're going to learn about representational systems. Now, if you don't know what a representational system is, then you'll be happy to know that people experience their reality in terms of unique ways of looking at the world. For example, they could be visual. Visual people have a certain way of looking at the world. They see things in terms of what they see. They see your point. They see themselves in the near future doing something. Auditory people hear things mostly. Now, keep in mind, most people have all of these senses. Most people have eyes and ears, and as we'll look at in a minute, they have feet and body parts which can feel things in the universe. So we're not saying that visual people only see things or auditory people only hear things, but they primarily relate to that sort of representational system. So an auditory person would say, I hear what you mean, or I hear you, man. You ever heard somebody use that phrase? Now, kinesthetic people are more touchy-feely and into motion, so that's how they relate to their worlds. We're going to get much more in-depth in that coming up. We're going to talk about pacing and mirroring. Pacing and mirroring are techniques that you can use to follow what somebody else is doing, and eventually you can do something called leading. Leading is where you have followed what they're doing, and now you're doing things and having them follow you. You're leading them. Pattern interrupt techniques. But what if you can take someone while they're doing something they normally do, tying a shoe, shaking your hand, saying hello, walking down the street, something they normally do, and then interrupt it and have them do something that you want them to do? Pattern interrupt techniques are the way to go. Direct command. So often in conversational hypnosis, it's overlooked. What's wrong with just telling someone what to do? All of this cloak and shield information about manipulating people by using secret words and so forth is very helpful and is very fascinating. But sometimes all you have to do is tell the person what to do. So we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about suggestibility tests. If you're dealing with a person who's highly suggestible, well, all you need to do is find out that they're that suggestible and then just tell them what to do. Some people, believe it or not, are just waiting for other people to tell them what to do, and you don't have to hide it at all. Embedded commands. We'll talk about embedded commands in text messages. This is a modern world, and perhaps years later after this recording is made, there'll be no such thing as text messaging, but right now there is, and text messages sent through cell phones are very popular. Why not embed a hidden command in a text message and have someone do what you want them to do just by sending them a text? Embedded commands in emails. Imagine having the power to hide a command in an email. Embedded commands while having a phone conversation. You're talking about one thing, but you're having them do another. In your library, in this course, you have access to that information. Embedded commands in person while just talking to someone. Getting out of a ticket while dealing with a police officer. All sorts of information about how you can represent yourself in a legal way and prevail. How to deal with a mechanic. That's going to be in our specific examples. So those are the sorts of things that you can look forward to, and we're going to talk about specific techniques which will allow you to have access to that power. That's what's coming up, and now let's look at the history. Let's go back now. We've gone forward a little bit. Now let's go back. How in the world did this whole thing start? Conversational hypnosis. How did it get started? Well, conversational hypnosis is very interesting in that it has its roots going all the way back to Ivan Pavlov. Do you remember Ivan Pavlov? Ivan Pavlov was a Russian scientist. Interestingly enough, his parents wanted him to be a priest. He didn't want that. Ivan Pavlov was not interested in that. He began his studies in the ecclesiastical seminary, but then he decided to begin studying natural sciences. So a little bit before 1900, in the year 1879, he received his doctorate and began contributing to the body of knowledge that we have about conversational hypnosis. He didn't realize that that's what he was contributing to eventually. He never set out to contribute to anything called conversational hypnosis, yet we find that some of the techniques he developed over 100 years ago are still helpful today in conversational hypnosis. Ivan Pavlov, in his most important and interesting, in my opinion, contributions to the world of science, had dogs smelling food coated with chili powder and eating the food. What he realized eventually was that the food didn't even have to be present for them to begin to salivate, or what he called having a psychic secretion. All that had to happen was some sort of stimulus. If the stimulus had happened at the time that the dogs had previously seen the food or previously been eating the food, then in the future, all he needed was a stimulus. For example, if they were eating some food and Dr. Pavlov rang a bell, well, the dogs would associate the bell with that food. That today has formed the basis for what we call anchoring. We're going to get into anchoring, but keep in mind it came from Ivan Pavlov. It came from research with dogs. Ivan Pavlov was doing research with dogs and their salivary glands, and he discovered something which is helpful today, something that we can use today in conversational hypnosis, and that is anchoring and installing anchors in ourselves and anchoring people to us. We're going to talk much more in detail about that later, but I wanted to introduce that concept to you now, and I wanted to give credit where credit is due with Dr. Ivan Pavlov, all the way back before the year 1900, establishing these simple principles. You know, Dr. Pavlov was so powerful and so wonderful and made such an amazing contribution to the body of science that he won a Nobel Peace Prize. In 1904, he won the Nobel Peace Prize in Physiology and Medicine. So Dr. Pavlov is the, in my opinion, the founder, the one who started the whole ball rolling without even realizing it. He wasn't trying to be the founder of conversational hypnosis, but he was, in my opinion. So it started all the way back with Ivan Pavlov. The next person who is significant in our look at the stars, the people who contributed greatly to the world of conversational hypnosis, the next up would be Dr. John B. Watson. Now, Watson was a behavioral scientist who liked to take the basic principles that Pavlov had established and apply them to humans. So Dr. Watson was instrumental in making the field something which had more broad applications. It was understood during Pavlov's time that the experiments he did with dogs could apply to humans, yet with Watson, an often overlooked scientist, we see that those principles are clearly being applied to humans. And we see the psychology courses that were being taught in universities were being filled with information that Dr. Watson was coming up with. So it was very clear at that time that behaviorism, which and it now had a name, behaviorism was the next phase in what Dr. Pavlov had discovered. Behaviorism has to do with the law of effect, if you will. What happens in an environment will affect a human, but how will it affect the human? That's what behaviorism looked at. How does your environment affect you and what you do? But they look at it in a very simple way, which I actually like, a behavioral way. What behaviors will you have that are different based on what happens in your environment? So you can see how this contributed to conversational hypnosis. We are causing things to happen in the environment of the individual by embedding commands and using texts and so forth. Whatever techniques we're using in our conversation can take many forms, text, writing, direct words, but those are changes in that person's environment. How do they affect that person's behavior? Do they then like us more? Do they then trust us more? Do they then want to be with us more? And the answer is yes, if we do it right, if we apply the right technique. But we have Dr. Watson, Dr. John B. Watson, to thank for taking this and making it more applicable to humans. This body of knowledge, which, as you can see, is now snowballing. It's now gaining speed. We're in the year about 1913 now, and it's gaining speed. It's coming along. Dr. Watson had a very long career, but around the time that he became popular was about 1913. So his contributions, which spanned many years, are taking Pavlov's experiments to the next level. So we can see things evolving now, getting closer and closer to conversational hypnosis. The next scientist that I would like to talk about is none other than B.F. Skinner. That's B as in boy, F as in Frank, Skinner, S-K-I-N-N-E-R. B.F. Skinner, for those of you who may be psychology students, is a very popular behavioral psychologist. He was mostly popular in the 1950s, but his techniques are still talked about and taught in psychology classes today. He did a lot of experiments with birds, getting them to do certain things, getting them to seem like they were bouncing a ball back and forth to each other. All they were actually doing is hitting the ball and tapping the ball because they had been programmed by him that when they do that, they'll get some food. So naturally, they want to hit that ball, hit that ping pong ball or whatever it is, back and forth to each other all day because birds like food. So he was able to create the illusion of these birds and other animals doing various things, but they weren't actually interested in doing that. All they wanted was food, and that's the only way they knew how to get it. So he could also teach a rat how to go through a maze by just rewarding it. A system of rewards turned out to be something which was very beneficial in training animals and eventually humans. So we see B.F. Skinner contributing greatly to the world of conversational hypnosis. Now, how does this apply to conversational hypnosis, you may be wondering? Well, we live in a stimulus-response world, and B.F. Skinner realized that. He realized that if you have a certain stimulus in the environment, it will elicit a response. He took what Dr. Watson had done and really took it to the next level. So you can see it increasing now as this snowball, or however you want to look at it, as this large machinery is evolving. It's becoming larger and more powerful, yet at the same time, we can say more streamlined, because we're learning what works really well. And we're letting go of things that we don't need. We no longer have to worry about applying this to dogs. B.F. Skinner kind of put a face to what we're talking about and kind of made it classy and conversational and very interesting. When I say conversational here, I'm talking about getting people to talk about it at that time. He was getting it used in the school system. One of the things that I'm very interested in, one of the things that my doctoral research focuses on now as I carry on this legacy, getting this information to the school system. How can we use this to stimulate young minds to want to learn? Well, we're going to find out that we can use this in conversational hypnosis to cause someone to want to do almost anything. If we give them the proper stimulus, they will do almost anything. But we have to know what proper means. We have to know which pieces fit in which parts of the puzzle. So thanks to B.F. Skinner, we were able to see the advancement of conversational hypnosis even further. Now, again, keep in mind, he did not know that he was contributing to conversational hypnosis. In fact, that word probably wasn't in his vocabulary at all, conversational hypnosis, that phrase. So what Dr. Skinner was actually doing was contributing to the body of knowledge called behavioral science. He was a behavioral scientist. What could you do to someone that would cause them to do something else? How could you manipulate them? How could you cause their behavior to change in a certain way based on what you do? Dr. Skinner. Now, the next person I want to talk about is Dr. Milton Erickson. Now, he was a medical doctor. He was an MD. Milton H. Erickson, MD. Now, keep in mind that Skinner and Erickson were contemporaries, meaning they did their research and their contribution about the same time. But the way I look at it, in my mind, is that Skinner formed the hardcore foundation for behavioral science. Behavioral science is, in my mind, as a person with a degree in psychology, a hardcore science. You can just do something and something else happens, and it's very cut and dry. There are measurements taken scientifically, and you know the outcome based on what you do. You know the independent variable, meaning what you're going to do, and the dependent variable, meaning what's going to happen as a result. So very scientific, the approach that behavioral scientists take. Well, Milton H. Erickson, MD, took this a step further, because now we're getting into the idea that you can do certain things, but you're not going to have a definite measurable result. Milton Erickson was more into therapy. And in therapy, you're dealing with humans on a very human level. You're not treating them like machines. Behavioral scientists, believe me, they wish that everyone was actually a machine, and that's the way they look at the universe. That's the way they look at people and the way people interact with each other, as just machines interacting with each other. I've read Dr. Skinner's information and Dr. Watson, and that's pretty much how they looked at the world. Well, Dr. Erickson had more heart than that, if you will. I'm not saying he was a better person or that Skinner and Watson were worse people or anything like that. I'm just saying that Dr. Milton Erickson introduced that element that we would consider to be compassion, if I had to pick a word for it. And he realized that with a little finesse, you could get people to do things. And he also realized people don't like positive change. It's such a wonderful idea, but people are resistant to it because they don't always want what's best for them. There are other factors causing them not to want to change. For example, and I've dealt with this many times with dealing with females who want to lose weight. If they have been abused sexually previously, then putting on extra weight can cause, in their minds, the opposite sex to not be interested in them. So they will gain enough extra weight until they become, at least in their minds, unattractive to the opposite sex. Now, keep in mind that this is in their minds. Anyone can be attractive to anyone if they have the right mindset. If you believe in yourself, it doesn't really matter how large or small you are or anything like that. It just matters how you portray yourself. If you really believe in who you are, you're attractive. That's a fact. So if you are in that position where you're overweight, don't worry about that. Let that go. You are fine. You're wonderful and beautiful because you're who you are. So believe in yourself. But getting back to the story, certain people have a serious, serious hurdle that they sometimes feel they cannot overcome by themselves. And that is, what if I were to lose that weight? Then I'd be attractive to the opposite sex, and the abuse might happen again. That's a serious concern. Well, Milton Erickson understood things like this. He understood that people weren't computers. They're people. They're humans. They have real feelings. They're real, living, breathing people with deep feelings and really good reasons, quote-unquote good reasons, for not changing. If I think something terrible is going to happen to me, if I change, if I make a change that you might consider to be for the better, but I know that if I do that, something terrible might happen again, even if my suspicion of something terrible happening is crazy or made up in my mind, it doesn't matter. It's real for me, so I'll hold on to it. And Erickson realized this, that people held on to negative habits, negative ways, and got stuck because of deep-seated problems, deep-seated psychological challenges, which they themselves felt that they weren't up to. Well, thank goodness for Milton Erickson, because now we're really seeing conversational hypnosis developing. Milton Erickson made no bones about it. He said that he was using hypnosis with his clients, with his patients. Well, that caused quite a bit of controversy and caused quite a bit of trouble for him, because although hypnosis was interesting, medical doctors weren't exactly supposed to be practicing hypnosis. Not only that, if they were, they weren't supposed to be getting on a soapbox and talking about how wonderful it was. Well, Erickson just wanted everyone to know. Thank goodness he stuck to his guns and he kept moving forward. He contributed, so far in our lineup of superstars, he contributed more than any of them to conversational hypnosis. Erickson could sit down with a patient and just talk to them. At the end of the conversation, they would be reprogrammed to do something different. Well, that power that Milton Erickson had, he's passed away and left his legacy, but his power that he had will be yours, because what he did was very, very simple. He simply listened to the person, got into their belief system, and worked within that framework to help them change. He used metaphors. He used stories, which seemed like they were about one thing when actually they were about another thing. It may seem like he's just telling you a story about something, but actually he's getting you to change. He's getting you to change your habits. Now, if you're a therapist, then Ultimate Conversational Hypnosis, this program that you've purchased, is going to do wonders for you in therapy. If you're not and you're interested in using this information for other purposes, it's going to do wonders for you there. And we owe it primarily, in my opinion, to Dr. Milton Erickson, who has taken this great machinery that's been developing, and he has manipulated it or controlled it in such a way that he has now made it subtle. It's now subtle. I don't have to ring a bell to get you to salivate. I can just use words now. I can talk about it, because that's the finesse. That's the subtle finesse that Dr. Milton Erickson added to this body of knowledge. The next superstar in our lineup of historical contributors to the world of conversational hypnosis is Richard Bandler. Richard Bandler is neither a medical doctor nor a doctor of any kind. He has a master's degree in psychology, but he has contributed greatly to the field of conversational hypnosis because he took everything that came before him and evolved it into something called neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. Now, to be fair, NLP is so much more than just taking behavioral science and making it more applicable to humans through conversational hypnosis. It's a lot more than simply that. To state that would be an extreme understatement. But a lot of what we have from conversational hypnosis has come from neurolinguistic programming. Although it was not just the logical extension of behavioral psychology and what Dr. Erickson was doing, it did build on it. In fact, Richard Bandler met with Dr. Erickson. Richard Bandler and his colleague, John Grinder, actually founded NLP together. They both came up with the concept and both promoted it, and they're still both living at the time of me making this recording, which is 2008. So at this time, they're still alive and well and still teaching, as I understand it. And Richard Bandler actually divulged this information to me in the 1980s. He had already met Milton Erickson. He had already taken the information and, with Erickson's permission, had written a book on the topic of Erickson's language patterns and how Milton Erickson worked with patients by changing the way he would talk to them to change their behavior. Well, then Richard Bandler started helping a lot of people by teaching them these techniques. And that's sort of where I come on the scene. In the 1980s, I was fortunate enough to meet with Richard Bandler and personally get trained by him. Now, keep in mind, Richard Bandler has trained and continues to train many, many people. So it's not as if I was part of a select few or anything like that. But I was fortunate early in my career to have access to a man who I consider to be a genius, and that is Richard Bandler. Different people have different opinions about him, just like anyone else. But Richard Bandler, although not a doctorate-level instructor, is still, in my opinion, a genius. And he developed neuro-linguistic programming, which forms the majority of what you will be learning in this program, conversational hypnosis. The ideas that he came up with must be credited to him. The conversational patterns which he developed, which kind of sprang off of what Dr. Erickson had done, and Dr. Erickson kind of sprang off what Skinner had done and Watson had done and Pavlov had done. So you can see how all of this leads up to you receiving this information in a very helpful format. When I met Richard Bandler and began learning about what would later become, in my mind, conversational hypnosis, when I learned his neurolinguistic programming techniques, I was fascinated, and that was over 20 years ago. Since then, I've been teaching it myself and using it with patients around the world and using it in classes. Very helpful material. I'm happy now to present it to you in a format which you can use. Different modules containing different pieces of information which you can apply in your life and you can use to help others. And yes, you can also use it to manipulate, control, and persuade others. And that's fine. And certainly Richard Bandler, having met him personally and having trained with him, I can say that he would clearly say also that that is a lot of what NLP is all about, getting people to do things. And hopefully you'll be getting them to do things which don't do them any harm. Now, Bandler is, in essence, a therapist, I would say, since he has a master's degree, both a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in psychology. And his main goal is to help people overcome the obstacles that hold them back, things that are in their minds that they feel that they can't overcome themselves. Of course they could, they just don't feel that they can, so he has developed this system to help them. Now, the same system that can be used to help people can also be used for you to get what you want. And so a lot of the language patterns we will look at had their most recent roots in the work done by Richard Bandler and his partner John Grinder. So I hope you now have a better understanding of this information, of where it came from, of who contributed along the way, of the contributions which I would hope are preserved historically, because we need to remember where everything came from. We need to remember that all of this has its roots essentially in training animals. And isn't it interesting that a lot of the basic, very, very basic information that is the heart of all of this can be applied to animals. Now, we have come a long way since Ivan Pavlov, and I'm not saying that you can talk to animals and use conversational hypnosis on them. That's not the correlation I'm trying to draw at all. But at the essence of it, it all came from the fact that we are very basic, and we can be manipulated at a very basic level in our stimulus response world. And we are essentially not too much more sophisticated than animals. Now, when we add language to the formula, well, that adds a level of possibility. Now we can control through language. We understand language, and we can use language to control what other people do, and they understand it as well. Animals understand language in a very basic way. They understand certain commands, but it's not at the same level as humans. So I hope that this walk down history lane, the history of conversational hypnosis, has helped enlighten you and stimulated your mind a little bit so that you are open to learning the rest of the information that I have to share with you. Not only listen to what I say, but you're going to have to apply what I say. And again, I want to point out that homework is a major key ingredient in your success. You must apply what I will teach you in order to be successful. If you go through this program and just listen to it the first time, I have no problem with that. As long as you're planning on listening to it a second time and actually doing the things that I tell you to do. But it's better to do them as you go. Listen to each module from beginning to end. They're only about an hour long each. You can listen to it on the way to work and then on the way back. If you have a half-hour drive, if you have an hour drive to work, listen to one on the way to work. Apply the information when you get to work. Then listen to one on the way home and apply that information when you get home. You're going to find that you're going to need test subjects. You're going to need people to try this information out on. You're going to need to have friends who you can practice with. Now, don't worry about getting caught with friends. You're going to get caught sometimes, and it's okay. But the idea is you're initially starting out practicing with friends. Another great group of test subjects to start practicing with are people you'll never see again in your life. If you're going to a party, especially if it's out of town or out of the country that you live in or out of the state that you live in, and you're at a party and you'll never see these people again, what a wonderful opportunity to try some of these techniques. As long as these people are not people whose influence determines your future or anything like that. So feel free to practice the techniques that I'm going to share with you in the subsequent modules in situations where it really doesn't matter. Or if you blow it, if you mess up, if you get caught, it doesn't matter. Because you need practice. Just like when I got on the bike that first time and I rode down the driveway and got onto the sidewalk and hit a tree. I needed the practice. And I got back on that bike and rode a little further the next time, a little further the next time. And I'd ride until the bike wouldn't go any further because, remember, I just put my feet on the pedals. I wasn't pedaling. Well, that's okay because eventually I started pedaling. And now I can ride on the beach with no hands. I can ride hands-free. So that's something that's, I'm not in the circus or anything riding a bicycle or competing in the Olympics riding a bicycle, but I can ride a bicycle. I can ride a bicycle just like any other bicycle riding person can ride. And that's because I stuck with it. That's also because riding a bicycle is simple and easy. This information is simple and easy as well. All you have to do is apply it, and you'll be riding the bicycle of ultimate conversational hypnosis right down the street, down any street in the world that you want to ride it down. You will be able to manipulate and control and persuade people in any situation, just like riding a bike, as they say. You're going to be amazed at how easy it is, but you've got to be prepared to hit that tree a few times and get those bruises. It's okay, especially if you're doing that among friends or with people you'll never meet again, because you'll apply these techniques. People will say, wait a minute, what's going on? You just got caught is what's going on, and it's okay because you're just practicing. The next time you try it, you're going to have a more smooth delivery. So I want you to be up for the challenge. It's a very simple challenge, yet it's important that you follow through. So I want you to make it through all of these modules, and I want you to apply the information. But guess what the most important part is? The most important part is that you have fun. I don't want you to look at this as a task. I want you to look at it as something fun. It's exciting to learn how to get your way. It's exciting to go out there and say something and have somebody do something just because you embedded a command. It's fun. It's exciting. It's rewarding. As I've already mentioned in the previous module, you're going to save money. You're going to start seeing through salespeople and their nonsense and what they've been doing to you for years. Over your lifetime, you're going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. So if nothing else, you're going to get that out of the program. And if you want to turn the tables on them, you can do that as well, because you're going to be the most highly trained black belt in the sparring contest after you finish this program. It's called Ultimate Conversational Hypnosis for a reason. It is the best, and it will make you the most well-equipped. I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, hoping you have an outstanding day.